The last time we spoke, we actually talked about artificial intelligence and this, I think, mostly sort of positive outlook as it pertained to productivity, right? We would have a productivity boom, the economy would be more efficient, returns to investments in machinery and capital that benefited from AI would be, those returns would be higher. And it was actually a sort of counterintuitive case of where maybe higher interest rates would make more sense in an AI enhanced world. Okay, so there was that. So now we have an oil price shock, which is very different than AI, but in terms of the aggregate economy, it does the opposite thing to the supply curve in the economy because oil is an input to just so much production. And so if you don't have that very important input, you don't have production. So this is a case of a negative supply shock. And if we take this really, really far, sort of analytically, we think, well, now the machines that only generate a return if they have fuel can't generate a return and so forth. And if you work this through, you think, well, then maybe the answer is to lower interest rates in the presence of this shock. And again, here, a bit of sort of irony, counterintuition is that's probably not right. So that's what I thought was interesting, was to think about how this oil price shock will play itself out in the macroeconomy. And then, of course, because we tend to be obsessed with the Fed and monetary policy, and by we, I mean me, what does the Fed then need to do in the wake of an oil price shock? So that's the real motivation. And is it just the opposite of what it needs to do in, let's call it a good shock, like an AI productivity shock? And the answer, the short answer is no. So.
When we talk about the negative supply shock, we also know slash hope slash probably still believe that this is temporary.
Yes, and that turns out to be the reason why this is actually a little more interesting and nuanced than one might expect. The crude, if you will, that is in the ground remains in the ground. Importantly, the knowledge, I think of this as like the recipes, the knowledge of how to turn that input crude into things like gasoline and diesel fuel and so on, that's still intact. And for the most part, now I don't mean to sort of gloss over the belligerent activity and destruction and so forth, but for the most part, the refining and transportation capacity of the economy as it pertains to petroleum and so on is in place. So if the hostilities end, it won't be like flicking a light switch, but in the sort of life of a macroeconomy, it sort of will be that, okay, well, then it will be back. Everything will be back on. The lights, as it were, will be back on. And so this is a temporary, or as we often refer to as a transitory shock. It's not like there was a geological survey and somebody said, oops, you know, I added that wrong. Turns out we have half the crude in the ground that we thought we did, right? That would have been a permanent shock. This is something very different. So this is really an access and transportation and refining shock that will work itself out. And that turns out to be really important because that means the effects on the economy are also temporary in terms of the supply shock's effect.
So you say in this Substack post for Monday Macro that households smooth consumption. What does that mean?
Yep. Yeah, so that's a really critical point. The shock, what does it do? Well, the supply of the economy is reduced, again, temporarily. And this will get to the smoothing piece, temporarily. Prices go up. So it's mostly just, you know, intuitive thinking here. Prices go up. You have a lot of less stuff than you did before because of the supply shock. You also have less income because of the supply shock. You know, if you work in any way related to something that requires fuel, you know, there's nothing for you to do at the moment. So again, you know, it's exaggerating, but that would be the idea. So it has effects on the price level, positive effects, think bad effects. It also has effects on output, negative effects, think bad effects. So this creates a situation we often refer to as a stagflation. But what will households likely do? Well, if they too conclude, as we have, that this is not going to last forever, they are going to spend based on what we sometimes refer to as their permanent income or their lifetime earnings. They're not going to focus on the fact that at this moment their incomes are compromised and neglect the fact that this is temporary and their incomes will be restored at some point. They'll focus on the restoration. And so the idea here is, and this is really kind of weird to think about, but the negative effect on output is not going to be as bad as it might otherwise be. And again, what do we mean? It's just that you will continue to spend your clothing, your transportation, your housing quality and quantity and so on will remain roughly in place through this transitory shock. And so that means that the economy is actually not going to recess as dramatically as it might otherwise. So that's the smoothing piece. It's a nuanced piece, but I see it on a college campus every day. You've got thousands of students walking around who do not have the income at the moment that sort of aligns with their shelter quality, transportation quality, you know, and so forth. And what they're doing is actually quite rational. They're smoothing their consumption. I don't see them as spendthrifts. I see them as just consumption smoothers. They recognize that their lifetime earnings will look very differently than their current earnings, and they consume accordingly.
Well, what if it's not temporary? Or what if people get nervous about the duration of the shock?
Then it could have additional negative effects on output. And this is a really good question. This just really highlights or surfaces, if you will, the tension here for monetary policy. Because if you think of what we're talking about two bad things. We're saying the supply shock raises prices. We're also saying the supply shock lowers output. Again, maybe not as low as it might otherwise if they didn't smooth, lower if they do what you just suggest, sort of panic and begin to think, no, this is the new normal. I need to slow my consumption down. But in any case, we're talking about two bad things. This is this very cruel choice, as it were, that stagflation imposes on a central bank because, you know, you got to worry about the inflation because you want to keep that low and stable. And stagflation makes it high and variable. And you got to worry about employment and output because you want to keep that at some full Goldilocks level. Yeah. And stagflation reduces that as well. So this brings us to the question of what should the Fed be doing right now? Yeah. And again, we can entertain this conditional on whether they think it lasts a long time or a short time, but what should they be doing?
All right. So does the Fed want to hit their inflation targets?
I think they do. And I think they also worry about the output piece of this. I mean, I think they worry about both. The question is, and this is transitory as well, you know, what should they be doing? And so the title of the blog post refers to this looking through. This is, anyone Googles this right now or just listens carefully, you're going to hear this everywhere. Everyone's talking about how the Fed maybe should look through the higher inflation that you just asked about. And what we mean metaphorically is basically don't focus on that. It's a transitory deviation. Don't try to make it go away. To your question, they do care about low and stable inflation, but don't address this. Addressing it would mean raising interest rates. Just look through it. And that, of course, makes some sense, though not entirely for the Fed, and we can come back to that, when it's a short-run shock, right? So if this is, you know, this is, again, maybe absurd, but it helps sort of focus the mind. If this supply shock lasted for 36 seconds, you know, I think most everyone would say the Fed should just look through this. Everything will be back to normal in less than a minute. You know, go forward and don't change interest rates in contractionary ways. Don't raise them. But likewise, if this thing is going to last for 2 years, then the question is, okay, can you actually look through that? And then that, this is interesting because the answer relies on how independent and credible the Fed is.
Because you're arguing that they should raise the interest rates. You're arguing they should not look through.
Yeah, yeah.
And that gets to the credibility question. Say more about that.
Yeah, so there's a really interesting, and maybe for monetary policy types, disturbing irony here. So looking through it means not raising rates right now. So looking through it means seeing the inflationary pressures that you just asked about, caring about the inflationary pressures, as you just asked about, not wanting them there, but thinking this is not going to stick. It will go away on its own. We can look through it. But what that requires is something we refer to as anchoring expectations, another metaphor we like. But the idea is, if all of us are thinking the exact same thing, we're thinking, you know, the inflation is a little high right now, but this isn't like our Fed. Our Fed is credible. Our Fed is independent. Our Fed is not going to let this be the new normal. If that's our mindset, our expectations are anchored. And this matters because, as you and I have discussed before, there's, you know, I don't know, 170 million of us in the labor force. And if we're all thinking low and stable inflation is normal in terms of our negotiations for wages and interest payments and rent payments and so on, we don't build in, if you will, more inflation. We don't protect ourselves from this thing we fear because we don't fear it. But if inflation expectations are not anchored, what does that look like? That looks like maybe inflation from the supply shock. And then a thought on our part that, they're not going to have essentially the monetary policy guts to fight this. Mm. So inflation just, I'm making this up, went from 2 to 4. They like 2. They don't like 4. We know they don't like 4. We also reason they don't have, you know, the monetary policy guts to raise interest rates to bring 4 back to 2. And so we start building in, pricing in 4. So ironically, because their independence is compromised in part because of an argument with the administration about why the Fed should lower interest rates, that argument has essentially forced the Fed to raise them right now because they have to demonstrate their sort of credibility chops. Otherwise, we're going to think the worst, which is as soon as we see inflation high from the oil shock, we're going to think, well, this is the new normal because they're going to bend, right? They're going to sort of twist in the wind, and they're not going to fight this. Whereas if we're seeing them as very credible, independent, and so forth, the Fed actually never has to act on any of that. We see them as credible, and they don't have to exercise that credibility by raising rates. It's a really sort of interesting theoretical approach, but the conclusion is just what you said. If the Fed's lacking credibility, if its independence is questioned, then no matter the transitory nature of the supply shock, they kind of have to address the inflation with higher rates, lest we think that they are prepared to essentially live with more inflation, which means then we do too, and we're going to take a position to protect ourselves.
If we don't trust the Fed, anchors away.
I like that. Yeah, that's very good. If we don't trust the Fed, anchors away. That's right.
And we don't really know what we're sailing into there then.
We don't. And so this is why this is so, this goes back to what we and everyone else seems to be talking about right now, the importance of the credibility and the independence. Because, yeah, I mean, if you have, we haven't seen it yet. I mean, this isn't, you know, fear mongering or anything. But if this oil price crisis were to, you know, induce, I don't know, a 4 or 5% inflation rate, that's a big deal if we think that's a new normal, because then, you know, you run to your employer and say, hey, I need a 5% wage increase. You might not get it, but if everybody's doing that, the tendency is for that to materialize. Whereas if you see the 5 and think, yeah, there's a war in the Persian Gulf, it'll be over in 2 months and the Fed will fight it and it'll come back to 2, that's a very different conclusion for the population to come to, right? So, yeah, we don't know what happens if inflation spikes and the credibility isn't there. And in the absence of knowing how that plays out, the best plan for the Fed actually would be then to raise rates, to just say, well, we're gonna just clear this up right now. We are going to be the inflation fighters we say we are. And you know, that would dispel any doubt and if you will, re-anchor our expectations.
Hmm. Is there a time frame, by the way? Like,
what's the delay to look through it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the less credible they are, the shorter this thing has to be, because you are going to question them every day. You know, it's like someone arriving late to your home. Every minute more that they're late, you're convinced they're not showing up. So every day that inflation is above what the Fed says they want it to be is a day where you question them just a little more. So I don't have like a set of, you know, a time span, but a few months, I think they could withstand and they could look through. But more than that, I think it starts to shape how we think about them and their resilience in terms of, you know, fighting the pressure against them.